Hey, everybody, it's Dean Jackson. Welcome to our book title workshop here. I'm excited that we're going to get to spend some time hatching some evil schemes with you guys and being able to come up with some great book titles for you. We're going to do some brainstorming here, be able to work together with you and figure out what would be a great title that would attract exactly the type of person that you want to work with, your ideal client. And so I want to set the stage a little bit before we do that. I've got the call in Q&A mode right now, so you'll be able to, you can hear me, but you won't have any of the background noise of a bunch of people on the line here, and I'll tell you how to queue up in just a second. But the focus of this call and the reason that I wanted to do it is because I see that it's a delay for people in moving forward on their plans to write a book or in their debate of whether they could use a book. And I think that when you get excited about and can envision the title of your book and imagine how that can make a difference in your ability to attract the ideal people that you want to work with, that gets you very excited. And that gets me very excited because I know the power of using a book as a lead generator. There's no better before unit tool. And I mean, I've used so many ways of attracting names and emails, which is really the bottom line of all of this. I'm a very results-oriented marketer. I focus on just the outcome that we're looking for. I'm not married to any particular method. I don't care what it is. What I'm looking for is what gets the best result. So I've spent my entire marketing life trying to figure out the best way to get that result. And in most cases, for any business, the result that I'm talking about is to get you in conversation with somebody who could be your ideal client. The more people that you can engage on that level with, the more opportunity that you're going to have to help people and the more opportunity that you have to grow your business. I've never seen anything get as high opt-in rates as a book. And, you know, I have been focused on the gathering of names and email addresses since the very beginning. You know, there's always this ongoing debate or talk among the internet between me or Jonathan Mizell or who invented the squeeze page. And I don't know who. We always joke about it and go back, but I was certainly one of the very first people who were using and had discovered the idea of only asking for somebody's name and email address as a way to build your list. And the thought behind that was that the more that we stripped away, the less options there were for people on your website, the more people would leave their name and their email address. And I took it all the way to the extreme of taking everything away from the website except the ability to leave your name and your email address to start a conversation or to, you know, move on inside to the website. So that's been a big focus of mine. And I've always been looking for what are the things that get the highest opt-in rates. And I think that a book has so much going for it in that it's already pre-stacked in our minds as an authority, its value. It's something that's easy to gather and consume. It's a resource. There's so many things that throughout our lives have kind of stacked the authority of a book into our minds and the value of it. And so the more that you can borrow from that, the more that we're automatically tapping into something that compels people to take action. You know, and this has been going on ever since the invention of the movable type. So that's not something that's going away. Books are still viewed as something that is a powerful authority piece, and the people who have written these books are viewed as powerful authority figures. So that's why it's important to have a book. But the thing about, and the important thing to keep in mind when you're writing a book like this is to remember that the book is not for you, it's for them, right? You want to think and begin with the end in mind here. We want to begin with the end in mind that is, this book is for my ideal prospects. What would they want in this book? And if you have that healthy mindset that you're writing the book not to so much demonstrate your knowledge, but to tap into their desire for information or their desire for transformation, and to present that to them in a way that makes them say, I want that. That's really what we talk about, right? The purpose of a title of a book is to trigger that I want that thought in their mind. And there's some formulas that we can use, some sort of categories of book titles like that. And we'll go through and I'll share the top five kind of categories that are my go-to categories for titling a book, and I'll give you some good examples of it, and then we can work through some and brainstorm some ideas for you. But let's think about beginning with the end in mind. We're going to, we want to very basically tap into the vision of what your client has in mind, what would be the most valuable thing for them, and all the while, keep in mind by asking ourselves, what is the job that we're hiring the book to do in our business? Why are we even thinking about writing a book? Why are we doing it? What's the purpose that it's going to serve in our business? And if the answer is to help me get more business, then we're talking about using your book as a lead generating book, as a lead getting magnet, something that's going to attract your ideal people to you. Now, it's really interesting because whenever you make that switch from being somebody who just knows a lot of stuff to somebody who's written a book, then forever people will add to your name author of whatever the name of your book is. And that's easy and attractive for people to seek you out as an authority to speak at their conferences, to be a guest on their podcast, to be a guest on their radio show, to be a guest poster on their blog, to spread that message, to seek and establish you as an authority figure. And so when you have a title of a book, you kind of own that little category in somebody's mind that you're the person who can help them do that. And that becomes a really valuable thing for you when you're looking for opportunities that you don't have otherwise. There's a lot more opportunity for you when you are viewed as an authority like that. So we want to keep that in mind. And remember, the job of work that we're hiring the book to do, if we could just wave a magic wand, the whole point of the book is to get you in conversation with somebody. And, when you realize it, that I don't want to understress or understate the importance that the book is really a tool, right? The book is a catalyst. It's just to get you in that conversation. And I think that in my observation of it, one of the things that I've always been attracted by about books is this idea of the minimum effective dose or the minimum viable product. You hear those things about the lean startup. And so I want to get, how can we get the the maximum effect with the minimum amount of effort? Where does it cross the line, right? And so my observation of seeing the way books fit into the landscape of our society here and of our business, the way that we're, you know, thinking about using it as a lead generation tool, is that it's a catalyst. Just like I said, we just want to get people to raise their hand. We want to use it as a way to turn invisible prospects into visible prospects. And so that means that if you don't know who somebody is and they come across your offer for a book and they go to your website and they leave their contact information to get your book, that book, in my mind, in the way that we've laid it out here, as far as what the job of work of the book is, has done 80% of its job. Once somebody has asked for it, the job is 80% done. And don't rely on the book to do the rest of the job. See, the book is not, the purpose of the book is not to do everything for you, to do all the work for you, to magically just transform people into your clients. It's only a token to start the conversation. The worst thing that you can do, and the thing that I often see people do when they're starting to follow up with people, is to use the book as the reason for following up and saying to somebody, "Hey, did you get the book? Did you get a chance to read it?" And who cares whether they've got a chance to read it? The answer is probably no. There's lots of studies that are showing now, because of the Kindles and the Kobos and the ebook readers, with all the stats that are available, just over half, only 55% of the books that are bought even get opened. I'm going to let you let that sink in. Almost half of the people who buy a book, don't even open it. And I mean, I'm guilty of that sometimes. I'm sure you are too. If you think about it, if you look through your Kindle index, you look at your homepage, there's probably books on there that you bought and have never opened. The reality is that less than 20% of people read an entire book. Most people don't even get past the first 100 pages. So the importance of it, and the way that I look at it, the way that I've shaped everything that I do around books, is to realize, well, what's the minimum effective dose? What's the thing that you actually need? Which, you know, if you're going to use a book as a lead generating tool, what are the minimum things that you have to have? You've got to have a book. Then you've got to have a title that upon reading it, the person that you want to be in a conversation with, your ideal prospect, says, "I want that." And then you've got to have a way for them to get it. Those are the three absolutely mission critical things in order to use a book to generate new business. And the title is where it all starts, right? Starts with having a title, because the title is really going to telegraph to people what they really want. You're able to get their attention. You're able to create this compelling desire to own that book, and you're able to spark the action that they need to take to get the book. And so that's really the most important thing. And then I think it's important to realize, when we're looking at what are the things that are the most important things, is to look at the things that don't affect our outcome. And by that, I mean that are not, I have a saying that I always use, that is it going to make the boat go faster? And by that, I mean, is it going to progress to the next level any further? Are we advancing the situation? And so there are things, when you're using a book as a marketing tool, that are not making the boat go faster, the things that don't affect the actual outcome. So the outcome is that I want somebody to ask for my book. So the things that don't affect it are the number of pages of the book. Nobody knows or cares, when they've made a decision that they want a book, whether it's 50 pages or whether it's 250 pages. It makes no difference. It's the title and the sentiment and the emotion that you've stirred that's going to get them to take action. Then just like that, they don't care about the number of pages, the number of hours that you slaved over writing it or planning it or thinking about it or putting it off. All of those things, none of that is making the outcome come true any faster. And neither is the clever way that you turned the phrase in the second paragraph of the third chapter when you finally, after 30 hours of editing, made the exact word choice that you wanted to make in that paragraph. None of that is making the boat go faster. The thing that's making the boat go faster is getting the book in front of people and having a title that makes them want to ask for it. That's what we're really focused on. So let's talk about some of the title formulas or the title ways that I like to use, and then we can brainstorm some for you. So here's five different title categories. And number one, I call this one Name It and Claim It. And that's essentially that we want somebody they read it and they say, I want that. And so there's some great examples of books that would fit into that Name It and Claim It category. And I think one of the greatest of those is a book by Dave Ramsey called Financial Peace. Now, just think about those two words carry so much emotional value. If somebody's in financial turmoil, they're stressed out, they're struggling, they don't know what they're going to do, and they see a book called Financial Peace. You imagine, even just saying those words, holding that book in your hand probably lowers their blood pressure, just having the potential of this life raft, you know, that there's this thing that's going to be able to help them. I want that. That's what they want to say. Things, I think Tim Ferriss did a great job with the 4-hour work week. It's a great example of Name It and Claim It. Oh, I want that, a 4-hour work week. How do they do that? That sounds great. We just finished a book with one of our 90-minute book clients called More Clients Now. That's a great Name It and Claim It. You know, it's like there's a saying in England, there's a funny advertising saying that they say it does what it says on the tin. And that's kind of what these kind of books are, that, you know, this one, you know exactly what you're getting when you're asking for that book. You know, the 90-minute book would fit in that category. The 90-minute book is presenting something that you could want. Now, when you think about what the outcome that your specific client wants, how would they really describe what would be a dream come true for them? We've got an example. We did another 90-minute book called The Adult Acne Cure. Now, that is a book that is geared towards people who are the ideal prospect for a device that costs $900 that would be very difficult to explain or get interest in a book, right? So it's not about the amazing device that can help stop your acne. It's not about making your mechanism the star. It's about flagging the cure, flagging the result, flagging what it is that your client is actually going to want. And so The Adult Acne Cure is going to be a book that's interesting to people who have adult acne or know someone who has adult acne. And so the book Financial Peace is going to be attractive to somebody who is in financial turmoil or wants financial peace. So that's a category, and just kind of keep that in mind, and we can think through as we're brainstorming some of these that might fit for you. Now, another category, the second category that I often use is what I call Just Do It. And this is where you can use the book title as a declaration, you know, where you're just kind of saying, this is to take this action, right? This is the action that we want. And so there's a great book that's one of the best-selling books of all time called Think and Grow Rich, where there's an action and an outcome. Stop your divorce. I wrote a book almost 20 years ago now with a marriage counselor with that exact title, Stop Your Divorce. That book has been selling every single day for almost 20 years now, sold over $5 million worth of that one book because it taps into exactly what that audience wants. Stop your divorce. I helped Eben Pagan when he was first getting started. I wrote Stop Your Divorce. I was telling him all about this idea of doing ebooks and selling them online, and he created his book called Double Your Dating. And went on to create another follow-up book for women called Catch Him and Keep Him, which those are the things that everyone. Marie Forleo came in that same class. I wrote that book, Stop Your Divorce, and then I did a whole course around 2000, 2001, called How to Write, Publish, and Sell a Money-Making Ebook. And Marie Forleo was in the very first class of that we did. And the book that we did then was Make Every Man Want You. And that's there's a great declaration there. We've got lots of 90-minute books fall into that category. We did a book with Lisa Sasevich called Boost Your Sales. Who doesn't want to get to that? We've got a book, Hypnotize Your Husband. This was with a hypnotist in London who came to the Breakthrough Blueprint, and we did a book on that for introducing the idea of hypnosis. Now, I think that there's something here that you can see in this pattern, right? We did, I'll give you another couple of examples of that category. There's one that we did called Drop 3 Dress Sizes. And we have another 90-minute book author who wrote a book called Double Your Income. Those are all declarations where you can imagine somebody getting that book as declaring that that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to stop my divorce. And this book is just the ticket to help me do it. I'm going to think and grow rich. And this book's going to help me do it. I'm going to double my dating. I'm going to boost my sales. I'm going to make every man want me. The kind of thing that you can do with a well-thought-out book title. As long as where you're, if that's the person that you want, you've got to think, begin with the end in mind, who's the person that you want to be in conversation with, right? If you've got a $900 device that helps people, cure acne, then you might want to be in conversation with people who have adult acne. So what do they want? They want the cure. So let's just start where they are. Begin with what they want. They want the adult acne cure. Let's get those people to raise their hand, and then we can start the conversation with them. Category 3 of the types of book titles that we can use is how to. That's a wonderful standard. It's very hard to go wrong with how to, because how to requires that you put some kind of a benefit on the end of it. You can't finish the how to sentence with a feature. You have to end it with a benefit or a result. There's a action that has to, an outcome that has to come from it. So some of you think about how some of the best titles that you've heard, How to Win Friends and Influence People. That's probably one of the most popular how-to books that you've ever heard of. We did a book with my barefoot water skiing friend, Lane Bowers, called How to Be the Best Barefooter on Your Lake. And then you've probably seen Frank Kern has become a fan of these 90-minute books, of short books. And he's got his book, How to Get High-Paying Consulting Clients, Even If Nobody's Ever Heard of You. How to Sell Your House for Top Dollar Fast. How to Get All the Listings You Want in Any Area You Want Without Making a Single Cold Call. The thing about when you're using a how-to is that you can be laser specific on the outcome that your ideal client would want to achieve. And by being the author of the book promising that benefit, you are positioning yourself as the authority, as the person who can help them get it. Category number four is what I call information gold mines. Now, a lot of times when people are starting the process of something, they will be seeking out information, especially if you're in something that requires, it's a long sort of service or a long gestation period or a long sort of information gathering thing. And if it is a little bit more involved to explain to somebody, give you a couple of examples here. And I think that, you know, information gold mines are really about data, about market data, about explaining the factual things of a process or explaining something for people. One of the examples that we're using right now is the 2017 Social Security Benefits Guide. So we're using that as the information piece that we're offering to people when we present them. We're sending postcards to the ideal person for it, and we're asking, just saying a simple question, right? If you plan on collecting Social Security after July 2017, read this. And we talk about all of the things that somebody needs to know about or has questions about with Social Security, and then offer that they can get all the information they need in the 2017 Social Security Benefits Guide. I've got a client in Canada who helps hockey players do branding and packaging, social media. And so there's something that it's sort of a difficult thing to explain to people. It's something that you only certain people are going to be interested in. But the good news is that in Canada, they take their hockey very seriously. I don't know if you know this about Canadians, but if you're going to be, if you want to be an NHL hockey player, probably the best thing that can happen to you is to be born in Ontario, because that's where they all come from. So, you know, all these parents spend thousands and thousands of dollars for their kids to play elite level hockey to get elite training. And they look at it that the NHL is a viable career path because they're in the right system, they're on the right track, that could lead to the NHL. And they soothe the expense with the thought that at the very least, they get a U.S. hockey scholarship. And so they don't have to pay to go to college. So that is always in the back of their mind. So rather than run ads offering the branding and social media services, we ran a ad and flyers and posters offering the 2017 U.S. Hockey Scholarship Guide, right? Be the thing that is the ultimate outcome that your group is going to want. So if they're looking for, if they're attracted to that, now the person that has asked for that is going to be a prospect for your branding services, because as soon as they get the directory, as soon as they get the guide, now they're going to say, well, how can I make my child stand out? How can I make my kid stand out among all the other kids that are competing for these hockey scholarships? Now they've, by asking for it, created a opportunity to help them get what they really want, right? You've identified an invisible prospect and turn them into a visible prospect. So if your business is helping people who may start the process of doing business with you by gathering up all the information, all the things that they need to know, that is a wonderful way to start your thinking here is, can I create a benefits guide or some kind of a guide that's going to help people out there? And then category five are what I call question magnets. And this is along the same vein of the information gold mines, but it's acknowledging the questions and the conversations that are already going on in people's minds. And so some of the things that you can use, some of the greatest titles that you've probably seen in that category would be the perennial bestseller of What to Expect When You're Expecting. That's answering questions that people have, right? Like, what am I getting into here? What to expect when you're expecting? We've used that same sort of approach with a title of How to Know When It Makes Sense to Refinance. And it's something where, you know, when everybody's shouting, now's the time, rates have never been lower, now's the time to refinance before the rates go up, or there's never been a better time in history, all those kind of things. Let's speak to what's really going on in people's minds is, how do I know when it makes sense to refinance? We did a book with a financial advisor on called How Much is Enough? Because that's the question that he said people are always asking. That's the question that we want to know when we're preparing for retirement. How much is enough? How much am I going to need to get to the finish line here? We've got a 90-minute book author who did a book called What Every Student Needs to Know Before They Leave for College. So we're creating kind of a roadmap, giving somebody a guide and insight into unknown territory, right? They don't know, and this book is going to guide them through that sort of thing, you know? So I think those categories here will give you a really great place to start, right? Name it and claim it, financial peace, the 4-hour work week, the 90-minute book, the adult acne cure, more clients now. Those kind of titles are really just overtly saying for somebody, I want that. Or just do it. The book as the declaration, category two, stop your divorce, think and grow rich, double your dating, make every man want you, boost your sales, hypnotize your husband, drop 3 dress sizes, double your income. If you can really tap into the outcome that you're speaking to, that your ideal prospect wants to achieve, that's a great great idea for your book title. How to is great because you can either have your long how-to title as the actual title of your book, or you can use it and combine it with any of these to as a sub-headline. At the very least, you want to have a nice how-to as the sub-headline of your book, right? So we've got How to Win Friends and Influence People, How to Get High-Paying Consultant Clients, even if nobody's ever heard of you, How to Sell Your House for Top Dollar Fast, all of those things. How-to forces you to fill in the blanks with a promise of a benefit. Then category four, information gold mines, and that's typically a guide. That's typically something that is going to act as the official document for something there. And then category five, question magnets, right? How to know when it makes sense to refinance, how much is enough, what to expect when you're expecting, what every student needs to know before they leave for college. And so those are the great sort of categories of a title. And I would love to brainstorm some titles with you and help you kind of think through what the best book title might be for you, or how to think about the position of a book in your business. Let's do this. I want to brainstorm some of your titles here, some of your get to work on how we can apply these kind of rules to your situation. So I'm going to open it up. If you have a question, you can press *6 on your phone, and that will bring you into the queue, and I'll be able to see that you have raised your hand, and then we will I'll start brainstorming some of these titles with you. So let's start here. Next question.
Hello. Oh, hey, this is Isaac. I work in the auto industry and been following you for a few years with Joe Polish.
Awesome.
Really impressed with the work you do. A few years ago, I've noticed there's a big problem in the auto industry, and that's people trusting dealerships and being concerned about being ripped off, et cetera. So I created a consumer awareness guide that helps them shop for a vehicle, avoid the costly mistakes that people usually make when selecting a vehicle, the scams that dealerships use to rip you off, and the manipulative advertising, as well as the critical questions you should ask a dealership before ever purchasing a vehicle. So a little bit of background on that. So I came up with a book title called Dealer Defense. And it's Secrets Car Dealerships Hope You Never Find Out When Shopping for a Vehicle. I don't know what you think of that.
Right, okay. So when you look at it, that you're getting into the conversation that's already going on in their mind, right? So when you look at it, what you just said, secrets that the dealers hope you never find out, I might even make that stronger if you say, how dealers, secrets that dealers use against you and how to defend yourself, something like that, where you're making it feel like I'm going to be equipped now, better equipped going into this than I would be without knowing these. But you're right on track with that. I mean, you're right on track with the, it would be a conversation that's already going on. That's where things like, when you look at it just purely on a data side, that's why things like these, is it True Car now? Or who?
There's a lot of them.
A lot of it used to be the Kelley Blue Book, right? So you could know what the things were, or there were, information, what would fall into that information gold mine. Would be that the dealer pricing, how dealers price things. That would be a valuable thing. But where's the next step for you? Where do you go with this?
Well, I'm just starting with Facebook advertising. I'm going to offer this as a free lead magnet where they enter their first name, email in.
Yeah.
Then I send them a good guide. It's a progressive opt-in. The less information you ask for, the higher the chance you have somebody of submitting something. So I just ask first name, email, then they submit. Next page pops up and says, hey, your dealer defense guide is on its way. It should be arriving in your email inbox in just a few minutes. While you're waiting, here's additional resources and cheat sheets that will ensure that your next site shopping process is the best you ever have, and then it goes into those. And then the next page after that, after they enter their phone number, it's another progressive opt-in where it's like, it's something to know all the tools and resources, but it's a whole nother thing when you're working with a dealership who's going to be honest and upright and treat you fairly. You know, I'll give you $100 if you come in and it's not the absolute best car shopping experience of your life. There's more copy that goes into it, so it's getting them to schedule a consultation.
Yep.
And then,
and are you live with that right now? Like, have you been using that funnel so far?
I've been working on this for about 3 years right now. There's a lot of other pieces that go into place with this, like with emails, mm-hmm. follow-up, et cetera. I haven't gone live yet. I'm hoping to go live in the next couple weeks.
Oh, awesome. So, yeah, part of it, you know, is the advice I would give you is to start, you know, testing the incremental things. You know, like you're, when you look at it, the only thing you have to be able to solve initially is, will people click on your ad, you know? And will they come to the site? Because everything else kind of hinges on that. And so much of it is the, so much of it is dependent on getting that initial click. Because if they don't, if you don't get that, then you don't get their name and their email, and you don't get all that other stuff, you know? So I think I would look at doing at those, maybe having examples of, you know, even if you look at those things like, you know, 7 ways dealers, you know, if you want to use trick or seven car dealer tricks that get people to pay more than they need to for a car or something like that, you know, and then as a result of it, you may have then the ability for people to leave that, leave their name and email to get your book.
Okay, I have that on the landing page once they click, when they submit the information. I have the 8 mistakes that people make when shopping for a vehicle, the 5 misleading tactics, or the 5 tactics dealerships will
use.
Well,
there's an interesting thing. Like, so, you know, when you look at it, that, and I would test all these words, right? But mistakes is a word that places blame, right? So when you say 8 mistakes, then that means that there's that it's my fault that I made this mistake, you know. Where, and we've done this with a financial advisor. Instead of saying, you know, 3, one of the headlines that would probably people would use as a financial advisor would be 3 mistakes people make with their retirement planning, right? And we went with an approach of saying 3 avoidable surprises. And there's an interesting way that, you know, I think you could use something like this that, that, you know, the full headline that we used for the financial advisor, we wrote a book called How Much Is Enough? And then the headline was 3 avoidable surprises that derail even the most cautious retirement plans. And each of those words is parsed out because it's different and has emotional value than some of the other types of words that we could have used. So like 3 mistakes people make is placing the blame on them, right? But a surprise can happen to anybody. And avoidable surprise means if you knew about it, you can avoid it, right? And we used the word derail because that's a great emotional word that is the equivalent of being taken off track. Right, because one of the language things that people use when they're talking about their financial planning is that we're on track to retire at this age, or we're on track that we're not going to run out of money. But when you say 3 avoidable surprises that derail, That means it's takes you completely off track. And then cautious was a better and more emotional word than conservative, you know? So every word, parsing out all these words, like, so if you take that approach and you say, instead of three, what was your thing? Eight mistakes. Let's work.
Yeah, it's interesting. Car shoppers make when shopping for a vehicle that end up costing them thousands of dollars and hours of frustration and regret.
Okay. Eight mistakes. What was the next word? I want to get the
Eight mistakes that car shoppers make when shopping for a vehicle.
Okay, car shoppers make. Okay. Yeah. Okay. When shopping for a vehicle. Okay, so I would maybe take an approach of looking at something like this, that saying, and let's even take that avoidable surprises, right? And say eight avoidable surprises that even the most knowledgeable car shoppers, you know, when you're saying something like that, right? That people have, they've gathered themselves, eight avoidable mistakes, or eight avoidable surprises that cost even the most knowledgeable car shoppers thousands of dollars.
Hmm.
Or sad. Okay. Do you hear the energy difference there, right? Like this is saying, it's something that I can respond to it without admitting that I don't that I'm asking for help because I have inferior knowledge. It's like because you've compelled me, right? You're already complimenting me, saying that I'm already a savvy car buyer. You know.
Yep, that makes sense.
So that language of avoidable surprises.
Okay.
Now it's like it's charged, you know, it's compelling, but it's compelling in a way that lets me know that I can gather this information. I have access to this information and that it's available to me. I just have to take it, you know?
Yep, that makes sense. So how, I'm sure we don't have much time to ask questions, but how would you change nine critical questions you should ask any dealership before purchasing a vehicle and how they protect you from getting ripped off?
Mm-hmm. So those, you know, when you're saying, I would have to go deeper into like what are those questions? Like what's at the root of them? One of the great things, and I'll share with you in answering it, the exercise that helps you create the answer that makes the answers, and it's about creating what I call a word palette, like a painter would create a palette of all the colors and the tones that they're going to use to create their painting. When we're creating marketing or book titles or advertising for it, we want that same kind of word palette to have the most valuable and most emotionally strong words that we can use, right? So that all came from for on the financial advisor side was creating a word palette that showed all of the different words that people that he would hear, you know, that you would have I asked him, you know, to come up with like, what are people saying, right? What, and the biggest question that people had was, how much is enough? You know, that's where we came up with that title there. Now, when you start thinking about the process of buying a car and you start thinking about those nine questions, there might be some clues into what are the things that those questions are going to protect somebody against, you know? And you start to look at and just put out the words and phrases that would be, if you just kind of divide a page in half and on the left side write, everybody wants this and nobody wants this, right? Like all the positive phrases and words and things that would go into the car buying experience. And on the other side, all the things that are, the negative things that go into that, right? All the words that people would use to describe. Now, when you get all of those words, then you can start looking at the individual things and you start thinking about, well, what's a better way of saying that word, right? So that's why when surprises are better than mistakes, you know, in a way, forgetting that thing. And cautious was better than a label of conservative, you know?
Okay.
And so that process is going to help you identify, you know, what the best things are. And each one of those nine, you know, you may need like a rotational strategy, right? Because if you're looking for people within a local geographic area, you're going to have to kind of rotate around. It's not going to be one thing fits all in your ability to kind of run one ad, you know?
Okay.
But it could
Makes
be
sense.
All those, yeah, all those tentacles that lead people to that information with the offer of get the book.
Okay. Thank you, Dean. I appreciate it.
You are very welcome. Hi.
Hello, this is Greg.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
Hi, I didn't realize I was live.
You're on.
So my question is about my business, which creates custom mobile apps for businesses. Most of our clients, just based on where we get leads today, are new businesses or very small businesses creating a mobile app for the first time. We have quite a bit of business process that optimizes for that, you know, somebody who's not technical but has an idea. And then it's to title. I'm just like dealing with myself, and it's like naming a business is like the hardest thing for me to do for myself. But when it comes to other people, it's more clear. So I just have that anxiety for myself. How do I name this book title?
Right. Well, when we look through it, if we were to say part of the easiest way to start is to start with the how to. Right. So if you're saying, what would be the how-to that would be, even if it's a long articulation, what would be the best articulation of what you could help somebody do that would be the benefit or the end result of working with you?
So the benefit is taking their idea and turning it into reality. They've got something they're passionate about, and I take them through the very complicated, very, you know, step detailed process of getting it live. There's lots of things I talk, you know, when I'm on a call with a prospect, there's lots of things I talk to them about my process. You know, there's the wireframing, and I explain what that is. There's the design, I explain what that is. But I'm used to this being a 30-minute conversation to, you know, the first time I talk to somebody, and I'm not sure how to determine which of those many things that I say that work as a collection of things to say to them, which ones stand alone, that, you know, meaning strong enough for the title of a book. So is there a recipe for thinking about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you got to start with the result, right? So that's what kind of helps it, is that what are people going to be using this app for? So rather than focus on the creation of the app, let's fast forward and say they've got an app. Now, why
And what is that going to do for them? How to, what are they coming to you? Why are they hoping that to create an app? Are they doing it to make money? Like, are they creating a money-making app, or are they creating an app for their business, or that they can resell? Or what would be kind of the top reasons that people come to you?
I would say making money is the vast majority. There are some projects that are really in support of an existing business process, so it's a value add to the existing clients, but generally it's they're targeting some new set of people, what will become their customers, and there's a profit making move.
Okay. And so then what would be so it's making money is the focus on the thing. Can you help people do that?
Well, something I've been thinking about since I've been listening to your audios and their various, you know, these kind of conversations you have with entrepreneurs is realizing that I come from a technical background, so I've been selling a technical product.
Right.
Excellent. But it's the next steps after that. I get them to launch, and I get them set up, you know, in the App Store or with Google Play for Android so that they're well representing what we've built together. And then they kind of go off and do their own thing in terms of it actually becoming a success. And so I've realized in reflecting on these kind of conversations you've had that I'm leaving money on the table, but I'm also just not even delivering the strongest value proposition by stopping my service at the end of the technical road versus, you know, helping them actually launch the thing.
Right. So that, you know, when you look at that, it's like your goal, you know, I think it would be so much more powerful if you could get your goal in alignment with their goal. Right? Like it's a classic situation where you're going to build the best technical thing for them and say, ta-da, here you go. And then they're kind of on their own after that, right?
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
And so, but what they really want, that's where, you know, they're at that stage, just by the nature of what it is, people are coming to you pre-revenue, right? Because they need this app to make money, right? So their goal in that is to keep their cost down, right? Have you ever had people come to you where they look at it as an investment and that they're not worried about the price of it?
No.
They want to get it going. And it's kind of an interesting thing that I always say a clarifying question that helps get you on the right track is, what would you do if you only got paid when your client gets a result? And
yes, I would do exactly what we're talking about, which is sell them the thing after the technical bauble. Yeah.
Right. And that's part of it, right? Like, so, you know, part of it is that, and there's so much more money in the harvest than there is in the seeds, you know?
Yes.
And so if you can collectively either, you know, with somebody to create a, you know, a solution that gets people to what they really want, how many of the people that you do apps for are what you would call successful with their apps?
After I hand them over the functional product.
Yeah,
less than 50%.
But even at 50%, that's pretty impressive, right, when you look at it. But what would be some of your best success stories? Like, which one, how many apps have you done?
About 20.
Okay. And are there any
in this model?
Are there any that you wish you owned a piece of?
No, in the sense that none of them are marketed as successfully as what I see they could be.
Right. I gotcha. And so part of it, I mean, that's part of the challenge is that you can build whatever somebody wants, right? That's the that's the thing. And this is a classic example. This is a classic illustration of ideas versus execution, right? That people always say, well, execution is the most valuable. Well, you're proving that execution isn't always the most valuable, right? What is the most valuable is flawless execution of a better idea. I mean, I'm sure that there was technically, you could have technically flawless execution of the idea that those 20 people came to you with, and that the app looks great, functions exactly like they wanted it to function, and doesn't break. Technically, you've executed on their idea, but for whatever reason, maybe it was a bad idea.
Well, right now I'm able to sell them my technical skill set and not get too worried about whether or not I believe in their business idea. So
right.
If I was delivering the next step after the technical delivery, it would certainly filter the projects that I take on.
It would, wouldn't it?
If I became responsible for the marketing success.
Not that. Are there people, because there's probably somebody just like you who is equally talented and skilled at the marketing side of the apps, but has no technical abilities?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Now, that's interesting, right? Like, just like when you do the app itself, do you what's your role in it? Are you a developer? Are you a coder? Are you a designer?
I have that background, but for these projects today, I manage the project. Technical background.
Okay.
So I bring that.
So it's
benefit,
not really any
that,
different, right? I mean, it's not really any different than just adding another department things that you're managing, right? Because you're finding and managing a designer who can execute. You're getting a coder who can execute.
Right.
You know, developers putting all that together, it would be the ultimate thing to have a marketer who can execute in getting the word out and getting the downloads and whatever, you know?
Yeah, I'm having one of those aha moments like, duh, yes, that's so obvious. Thank you for saying the obvious to me. I worry about they're already price sensitive, and then I'm adding on a whole other set of value, which comes with a whole other set of expenses, but I can see, so I have that resistance to it being at my delivery becoming more expensive, but I can also see where the value is an easier sell. Oh, well, you're going to actually help this thing be successful to the market. That's probably easier for them to agree to this
right
project.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only that you help them have if you're, again, it becomes a thing of it's holding you accountable in a way, right? But it's also, it's rewarding for you. It's rewarding to know that you're doing something that is definitely going to help people, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
To their
and so
business,
that,
their new business's success.
Right, exactly.
Versus my focus on technical competence and that delivery. This is a whole different kind
right.
of inspiring.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing. Do you listen to my More Cheese, Less Whiskers podcast?
Yes. I haven't listened to all of them. I just discovered it a couple months ago, but a lot of them, yeah.
Okay. So I think this would be a great episode for More Cheese, Less Whiskers. Let's flesh that out. You know, so
okay.
Yeah, go to morecheeselesswhiskers.com and click on the Be a Guest link. And then
okay.
in there, tell me, yeah, remind, just put a note that you and I were on this book title call so that Lillian will know that you you and I have talked.
Okay.
And that'll
great.
Bring it up to the,
awesome.
The top. But I think that this
yeah.
would be something that would be valuable to explore. And that
okay.
will then determine what would be the book that is the most, you know, what would be a dream come true book for your ideal client to read. And that's going to help you strive to become the provider that can deliver on the promise that this book is offering, you know?
Like title first, then figure out the delivery?
That, well, it's absolutely right, yeah.
Okay.
Title can inspire the delivery. Yeah.
Inspired, right. So I'm going to do some brainstorming around. The very first thing you said to me in this call was how to. Do you still uh-huh. is that the direction you would still be thinking, or is that
well, it gets
changed?
You in the right direction. Like no matter what,
okay.
whether the title of the book is going to be how to, or we use the how to in the subtitle. You know, these are frameworks. Like these questions is what would be the, you know, when I say name it and claim it as one of the book title things is like, you know, if there was a book called App Millionaire, that, you know, be an app millionaire, you know, that would be something that would be compelling for people. And you'd have to be able to see and point out things like that. Or what would be sort of the financial peace equivalent or the 4-hour work week equivalent? Or, you know, I'd look at it that, you know, when you talk about the way we're doing something with 90-minute book, the way we simplify things is we're helping people create a book in 90 minutes. That's compelling. You know, so
yeah.
what would be, is there a thing that
okay.
you can, for somebody, have the 90-minute app, you know, where how to turn your napkin doodles into a money-making app in less than 30 days or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Awesome.
You start thinking like that, that gets you down the path of thinking benefit-oriented and getting people started on a journey.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm like energized, jazzed, which is the experience
exciting.
I have after I listen to one of your podcasts is like, even though it's somebody else's business in some very different industry, I'm like, yes, that is so inspiring. So thank you for everything, this call and all that.
Awesome.
I, you know, consumed to the best. I appreciate it, man.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Bye.
Okay, guys, *6 on your phone. That'll bring you into the queue. This is the last one we have queued up here. Hi.
Hi there. My name's Nitzan, and I work with business owners who are facing their exit, and they haven't prepared. So
okay.
I have a title that I'm working on for an ad. It's find the one thing you must do to your business now so you can sell it for twice what it's worth today and finance your ideal exit.
Okay, find one thing you must do to double, what did I say that again?
Find the one thing you must do to your business now so you can sell it for twice what it's worth today and finance your ideal exit.
Okay.
Now, an alternative, would it complicate to give you an alternative?
No, let's do it. I want to hear it.
Yeah, so sell your business how and when you want for 2 times more cash than it's valued today. I left out some of the content in that one about financing your ideal exit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how do you – give me some context for what you do.
So really what I do is I work with the owner, the founder, to train him and his and either the team he doesn't have or create the team that he will have that'll take over. And then in that process, we develop systems so he naturally doubles the profitability of his firm and will double the value of his firm. And then when he's now got a firm that he can sell or hand over to somebody, he has options he's never had before.
And so, go on. What types of businesses? What kind of business?
They have to be businesses like that have enough that the there is at least a team that is high value, and the owner's willing to invest in. So let's say an architect is a good example.
Okay, architect.
Yeah, I think that if say a craft firm is big enough, then it could also be, if it has a leadership team of a few people, then even if it's not paying its workers high level, but at least it has some people who are there long term and skilled, so that the owner is willing to invest in them so that they become the future.
Okay, so an architect firm, architecture firm.
Yeah, that's an example.
What size? Yeah, what size would that be if we just take that one?
Well, I would say the firm has to be making. I'd say the revenue has to be $4 million, and probably I would say at least that, and probably they have at least three head architects.
Okay. And a founder, or they are the founders. What
Or including the founder, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the one owner who wants to get out. Is that what it is?
Yes. I've learned not to deal with films that have more than one owner.
Right. Exactly. I got it. Okay.
That's torture.
Yeah. When you look at that, or are you working with a recap, or are you doing the SBA, the entrepreneur recap loan, or
what's the
mechanism? What's that?
I haven't touched any of that yet.
Okay.
Until now, it's self-financed.
Okay. Okay, so you're financing them? You're doing the finance for them, or what? Where's the money?
Well, no, if you're talking about finance, they have to finance me, and by working with me, they can. If they need additional financing, I will involve people who know how to do that. My particular skill is in the training of individuals and development of the firm. It happens a great percentage of the time, people, when they begin their own businesses, they don't understand how to do business. I'm a good example. I had to liquidate my father's business and a family business that had been built up, and I have the experience of seeing how when you don't prepare a business to run without you, then in the end you have to trash it. And so I prepare the business so that other people, professionals, all the lawyers and the tax consultants and the financial planners, that I'll bring them in once the business is able to accept them and work with them.
And is that, do you think that in the companies that you've worked with so far, has that been or have you done this so far? How many people have you worked through this?
One. I've
process?
Worked with one.
Okay. And what was the outcome? Or are you in the process of it?
Well, we haven't gotten to the point where I've involved the final stage, but we did get from a business that had really no future to a business that now has a leadership team and systems in place.
Okay. So part of the thing, one of the most important advantages that you can have with a book is if you are writing field reports versus book reports, you know, like a field report is here's how we did it versus here in theory is how we would do it, you know, and that's a different. You come in from a different place when you have a company that you've taken from, you know, they've got this desire, but they don't have any systems. They don't have a thing that could run without the owner. And you've got this idea of how you can structure things and get it ready to sell is a different thing than if you have a company and you got them organized and then you sold it, you know, or got them out of it.
Yeah.
Are the ones that you're on track with, are they going to exit, or is that now that everything is running so smoothly, they're just happy to continue running it without it depending on them?
That's a big risk. That is a big risk because in the middle, I found with a lot of the things that I've done, as soon as I get to the middle, people lose interest in the end, and they feel, oh, well, now I don't need you. And
right.
I'm working on creating a clear map that reminds the people in the process that we still have a ways to go in the price of building half a bridge.
Mm-hmm. Well, I met a guy in Florida who what he does is he finds businesses that are for sale right now, and they're in that, you know, $2 to $4 million range, and they're not selling, and he'll go in with them and you know, work out an arrangement to partner with them and bring that kind of structure and marketing, ramp up the revenue and get to a point where they can sell for $8 or $10 million. And he'll take a percentage of the everything over what they were currently asking, you know?
Yes. Great idea.
Yeah, now that, because then you've got a motivated, you know, right? You're not, you know that they're motivated to sell because the business is currently for sale.
Right, they're too close to the finish line to stop running.
Right.
Yeah,
and if it's for sale now, yeah, then that may be, you know, that they may be not getting some bites, or people come in and they take a look around and they realize, well, he really doesn't have a business that I would want to take over here, you know?
You've touched on something that I found, and you've sharpened it even more, because I used to be a mediator and resolve conflicts between business partners, and I fell into this when I found a client who wasn't a particular situation that I've described. And what I loved about finding a client who needed my skills and was the ideal client has blood pouring out of his artery, and is jugular, and he doesn't have a lot of time to fool around. So it was a step forward for me to find a kind of client who needs my services, and he sees that he's got a deadline, literally almost. He mm-hmm. can't continue working forever. And what you've done is sharpen it even more, because if the deadline is as long as the deadline is conceptual, then it's easier for someone to leave the race. And mm-hmm. when your starting point for this solution was finding the broker who's already got, it's like a pit stop in a race instead of someone who's at the starting line. You know, you're already
right,
in the race.
Exactly.
Right? You just got to get back into it and you're done. So that's a beautiful
yep.
insight that you've given me.
So that helps. I mean, I think that's part of the clarity that helps you write a better book title, you know? And narrowing your focus is going to help too, you know? Like if you, where I was going to go with the architecture firm is, you know, when you look at the writing a book that is specifically, even though it's 80% the same stuff, that it's positioned as a book specifically for architectural firms, that's a valuable thing. Now, so that you start as close to the finish line as you can get with somebody who's already got their business for sale, and then the next step from that, rather than trying to convince somebody to do something, is to get people who are maybe one step away from actually putting their business on the market by using one of those information gold mine type of books, by offering the 2017 guide or survey of architectural business values, you know?
Yeah, and I could joint venture with a business broker.
Right. Now you've got somebody who's also motivated for the finish line, you know?
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah. Well, I think that would be an exciting More Cheese, Less Whiskers episode, too, if you want to do that. I think that would be a good thing to flesh out over an hour, you know?
Yeah, so I contact, what do I do with that? The More Cheese?
Yeah, just go, have you heard that the podcast?
No, I've heard you through I Love Marketing, but I never heard of More Cheese, Less Whiskers.
Okay, yeah. So the podcast is called More Cheese, Less Whiskers. It's at that.com. And each episode is one business owner, and we brainstorm and go through and hatch some evil schemes for their specific business. So we would walk through this process, you know?
Beautiful. How exciting.
There we go. So when you go there, there's a link up at the top called Be a Guest, and that would be where you can do that. Yep.
Thank you so much for that invitation.
You're very welcome. Look forward to it.
Yeah. Hot stuff. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, guys. Star 6 on your phone. That'll bring you into the queue. Got another one here. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you okay. Who is this?
Fantastic. My name is Elizabeth. Sounds like the only woman so far.
It sounds like it, yes. So, Elizabeth, what kind of book are you working on right now?
Yeah, so I have an opt-in. It's called Funnels 101, 6 Simple Steps to Build a List-Building Funnel. And it's geared towards coaches, copywriters, website designers, people who've been serving other people, making money. They're typically making $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a month, but they want to get into the automated element. And so what I love to do is help them set up their own opt-in, write their emails, pull all the tech together. And so I want to attract people who are thinking about a funnel, still have questions about it. I mean, I like the people who have, you know, who are leery about the tech and really want help with all of it. And so I want to attract them with something that's not going to be overwhelming. I've put together basically a 6-part video that walks them through each step and helps them to see, like, this is the piece you need after this, this is the piece you need after this.
Okay. And so what was the Funnels 101, 6 Simple Steps to Build?
A list-building funnel. I think that's what it is. I couldn't look at it, but I think it's 6 simple steps to build your list-building funnel.
List-building funnel. Okay. All right. And is that up, and are you done with the book and it's working right now? Or is that what you're thinking of creating?
Yep, so I've created the content. I'm actually working on the rest of the pieces. I've got a low-priced offer and just building out the email sequence aspect now. But my goal is to have it done by the end of the month. So I haven't tested this at all.
Okay. So, yeah, part of that is going to be the thing to get. What's going to be the most compelling thing that gets somebody to raise their hand, right? So when we look at this, funnels 101 kind of is that is a word that everybody kind of knows that that's kind of what they're looking for, right? And 101, that format of funnels 101 kind of makes it feel like this is start here. Right, that's really mm-hmm. the kind of thing. It's like this is what you don't know that you don't know about funnels here.
Exactly.
And then six simple steps to build a list building funnel. Now, are you do you train people to do this themselves, or do you do the funnel building for them, or what's your end result here? What are you hoping to do?
Yep, so I have two parts. I have my low-priced offer is showing them examples of high-converting landing pages, and then I have a mm-hmm. digital course that walks them through creating the actual opt-in, thinking through the title, the content, delivery, as well as a high-converting landing page so that they can attract and get the biggest pool of leads initially. And mm-hmm. then from there, I do have one-to-one offers that I do, which is doing it with them. So I can build all the tech for them, but it's strategizing it with them. It's pulling the content from their heads and really helping them. Because a lot of times they're either not creating content at all or they create all sorts of content, but they have no idea mm-hmm. how to package it. And, you know, just like all of us, they're like, how do I do this for myself? And mm-hmm. I just kind of help them pull that together, write it, and really just validate what they already know and make it look pretty.
So what I look at here, when I look at this idea, you know, it's a classic example of what I call separating the compelling from the convincing. And what I say by that is that there's something that is, you want to turn an invisible prospect into a visible prospect, right? You want to mm-hmm. find somebody who's thinking about building a funnel. And since they're thinking about it, it's probably a new person coming into this that they don't already have it, right? Because somebody who already has funnels wouldn't be as attracted to a book called Funnels 101, right? Because
exactly.
they're beyond
yep.
that. They've already got
right.
a funnel. And as long as that's your audience, that's great. So one of the things that you can, that really is compelling is I like your idea of the high converting landing pages. And
mm-hmm. that's my current opt-in.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because that is really a compelling thing. It was like, you know, Russell Brunson for years had his 108 split tests, right? Which how, mm-hmm. if
yep.
you're a marketer, how could you not want to see that? Because it's like wisdom that you have as a shortcut, right? So it gives
right.
you an idea of there's a voyeur sort of element to it that you can voyeur in on something, gain the wisdom without having to make the mistakes, right? You can see that these are the secrets of the high converting landing pages. Now, when you look at it, that the book that you have or the book that you could have is could be more in the lead conversion part of it, right? That it may not be as compelling on the front end as
okay.
it would be on after the opt-in.
Okay.
Right,
the
like
only thing
I
agree, because I feel like it's a lot. I mean, I think it's 5 videos, and you know they're 7 to 10 minutes each, and I'm like, oh, that's a big commitment for someone to learn something that I'm not, you know, it's an overview, but there's still specific elements. My current opt-in is the 9 landing pages that convert at 40% or more, and I changed it to be my low-priced offer, So I think I have 17 of them now. My only concern with that is that it was going to, was that, and I don't know this because I wasn't doing anything with my funnel after they opt in. All I know is that I was converting like 47% of people who came to my landing page signed up for it. But my concern is that those people, because they're thinking in terms of landing pages, that they probably already have a funnel in place, and you know, they might be even looking at like, oh, I want to tweak it, or it wasn't, I feel like it might not be specific enough to like the brand new beginner.
Well, I mean, part of the whole thing is that that's certainly an adjacency that, you know, when you look at it, that the problems that people have are either a lead generation problem or a lead conversion problem, right? So the landing pages start out that even if people are optimizing, they may think that the, and it's easy for you to go that they all work together, right? Like the most important thing in the landing page is that it sets up the conversion process.
Right.
You know, so they're definitely connected in a way that's easy to make that connection, you know, to make that leap. If somebody's thinking about it, they may be thinking, if they have their funnel kind of together, that they may not realize that maybe it's not their landing page that's the problem, but that it's the follow-up, you know? Are you more, you're more focused on the conversion process, right?
Correct. I like the conversion part. I do help my clients with the emails, but I mean, a lot of people, you know, you can just hire a copywriter. Like I write great copy, but that's not my, I do that part with them versus for them.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah. So what's the end result for you? I mean, what are you collaborating with them on? What are they paying you for? What's the result you're helping people get?
Yep. So the result that they want is an extra stream of income and leads that they can control. So typically they are getting referrals. And they see the uncertainty of that, or they're showing up in Facebook groups and spending a lot of time there. So I'm selling them an automated funnel that adds an extra stream of income with a digital product and helps them book calls that they can, you know, measure the statistics of.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that sound, that sounds very marketing and techie.
Right. And then what is the relationship that they have with you? What are you... how much do you charge, and what are you offering?
Yeah, so I do the funnels with them. So I think I've only done this with a few people. So I've done a lot of like one-off sessions and just charged a couple hundred dollars. But my next level is charging like $750 to do the funnel with them. And then so what would that be? That'd be creating an opt-in. Writing the copy for the landing page, strategizing out, like, what's my thank you page, the first emails, what's going to be the content of each of those, and then have a $2,500 package, which is basically doing it, like, creating all the tech for them and guiding them over a three-month period to get their entire funnel done. So one of them's 30 mm-hmm. days where we're just doing, I'm not doing any of the tech, and then the three-month one is we're adding a digital product, and I'm doing all the tech for them.
Okay, and so there's it's either you know, $200 or $750 or $2,500 is really the levels of things that people can work with you?
Correct, or I have a digital course on creating your own opt-in and landing page copy, which is, I mean, I haven't really picked the price, but I was thinking like $100, I don't know.
Okay, you haven't done that yet. I mean, you haven't sold it yet, or?
Yeah, I haven't. I mean, I've sold the live version of it, and I charged $100. Uh-huh. So I haven't sold the digital version of it, though.
Okay. And so that's kind of a cool opportunity there. Now, when you look at this, How many people have you worked with on the all the way creating it and over that 90 days getting them up and running?
One.
Okay. And what happened for them?
Yep. So she is still a little bit like, doesn't know if she loves Funnel, doesn't know if she, like, she's a long time in-person salesperson and just doesn't know if she can trust it to send her leads. So she, her landing page is converting at, I think it was 57%. And then after that, I would have to go through and check her statistics, but, so I don't have any like tangible, she's booked this many calls, she's had this many people click to book numbers yet.
Okay. So, you know, it runs in that same situation, you know, like there's part of the thing that I was sharing with the previous gentleman is this, the difference between a field report and a book report, you know, like in field report is this is what we did. And here it is, and this is how it works, right? So you have like a tested and proven method of getting the things. Whereas a book report is, here's what I've studied and learned are the best practices, and I know how to apply those, and I can help you through that. But there's not the tested and proven element of it, you know, that you haven't got anybody through that. And it's not, there's nothing wrong with that, but that's the stage that you're at right now. And so one of the things that would be very helpful for you is to work with a couple of other people to get it all the way through, you know, like to get to the point where they have a funnel that is producing so you can and document that process really, you know.
Yeah. Okay, and do you recommend...
How many people do you have right now on your list that you...
Sorry, I have 800 people on my list.
Okay, perfect. So some number of those people would... It would be a dream come true for you to help them build out their funnel, right?
Yep.
What's your hard cost on delivering that $2,500, what you're charging $2,500 for right now?
You know, I only work with two different platforms. So I do lead pages and active campaigns. So that's the other caveat of the tech. I
soon to be GoGo clients. We got to get you working with GoGo clients too.
I've heard of them. Okay.
Oh, so, okay. There we go.
I mean, my hard costs are my time. I have two small kids. And so basically I do my calls at 2 o'clock because it's nap time. And so I'm either going to hire somebody, like that's been part of the thing is like, well, I don't want to hire somebody to watch the kids because then I've done that before. And then I still didn't grow my business. I mean, my own fears, I guess, but,
yeah.
So I could realistically do it with pretty much no expense to myself.
Right. And I bet that you would have zero friction for an offer that said, let me build your funnel and I'm going to go through the process and help you with that. And you can pay me when we're making money with the funnel.
Okay.
Now that would be a very interesting thing, but you may be able even to get more than $2,500 to do something like that. Like the reason that I say that is that it is often less expensive to get the result for somebody than it is to convince them to give you money to get the result.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know if somebody said to you right now, can you help me get a funnel? Do you have the capacity to work with somebody right now and do that?
Yep.
And the thing that is delaying, right? Like you have, let's just face what we're dealing with here. You have let's call it 16 waking hours during a day, right? And a lot of those hours are spent on things that are already that have to happen, right? Like you've got to deal with your kids. You've got to do all of the stuff that goes into there. You've got stuff that's going on. But you have hours right now that are available for you to be working on creating a funnel for somebody, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And when you're, because you don't have somebody to work with on that basis right now, those hours are like a hotel room, right? They're perishable. If nobody accounted for, like it's, you know, it's 4:30 in the afternoon right now in Florida. And if you really thought about it, there are probably a few hours today that you've already had that you could have been working on a funnel for somebody if only somebody was paying you to work on their funnel, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so by not investing those hours, that's kind of the way you need to think about it in the beginning, to get yourself from the book report level to the field report level is the best investment that you could make right now. Because doing it and documenting it, like imagine, you know, if you do, you know, I do the More Cheese, Less Whiskers podcast every week. And it's, you know, one different every week, it's a different business. And we spend an hour just applying my 8 profit activators to that business.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an example of what I call documenting stuff, right? Like what people are getting is a legitimate $2,500 consultation for an hour. And they're, you know, that I'm doing it and I'm legitimately giving people my very best ideas and I'm documenting that as a podcast that other people can listen in on, and it creates a vehicle that creates all kinds of other content from it, right? So imagine if you took one person and you invest in creating that funnel for them, and probably one of the best people that you could do it for would be you right now, right? Because your funnel, you've got your $99 course, you've got your consultations kind of thing would be a good example. But at the same time, having somebody where you can help them get theirs set up, document it, and be able to point to it and say, this is what a money-making funnel can look like, you know? And then that builds your track record of creating money-making funnels.
Well, and that's been one of the things that's kind of made me, like, because I've worked with a lot of people on the beginning. Like, I've worked a lot on, like, let's set up your lead magnet and high converting copy for landing pages. So I've got more experience with that and then the entire funnel. And but one of the things that I've kind of beat myself up with is, like, well, Elizabeth, you don't have a funnel in place, so who are you to even say? And so that was kind of when my September focus is, like, I have to get, not because anybody else ever looks at me and expects it, but because when I look at somebody else, as a person who says they do funnels and their funnel sucks, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, I got it. I mean, yeah, that's perfect, right? You've got this knowledge, yeah.
And I have a couple other questions. So let's see. When it comes to documenting it, so in the past I've done, like, funnel chats, which have been, like, 20-minute, basically live coaching, like you do with your podcast. But when you talk about documenting, I mean, I'm guessing you're talking more about, like, the statistics inside their funnel, right? Not like
yeah,
live
the
coaching,
process.
Although,
like, go start from, like, if you can, if it's a 90-day process, that's a 12-week documentation kind of thing, you know? Like, here's what we're doing. So you're kind of just letting, because you're doing it for deferred compensation or doing it to get the results. And you don't have to release it live. You know, you don't have to throw your hat over the fence that way, but certainly record everything so that you can say, 90 days ago, we started, and here's what we did. Walk through mm-hmm. that whole process, you know?
Yeah. And how would you even broach that whole, like, pay it when it's done kind of thing? That I mean, maybe it's just a woman thing, but I'm like, ooh, I'd rather just not even ask for money. So how would you, like, set that up in advance?
Well, I think that would there be people who would say to you, oh, I'd love you to work on it, but I need to save the money? Like, it's a chicken and egg type of thing, right? Like, they're one of the things that's causing the delay of people hiring you to do the funnel is that they need the funnel to get the money to hire you.
Right.
Right? Like, you're looking at this thing. I did we have a company called Money Making Websites, and we do websites for real estate agents. And mm-hmm. one, I read about this guy, Cyrus McCormick, who invented the Reaper, the mechanical Reaper in the 1800s. That was a, you know, revolution in farming. And it allowed one farmer to do the work of 14 men. And it was expensive, and the farmers couldn't afford it. So Cyrus had the idea of giving the Reaper to the farmers, letting them use it for the season and pay him for it from the harvest.
Mm.
And that is exactly like when you're going to, if you don't feel bad about it, it's like you're taking a chance on them. Right? Like you're saying, I believe you've got something. I know that I can help you. Let me help you, and you can pay me when you do it, when you get the result. So we did that with our websites. We would say to people, I'm starting a new pilot program next month, and I'm looking for people. If you meet these requirements, you live in a market of more than 20,000 people, you have been in real estate for at least 1 to 2 years, you personally work with buyers and sellers, you've got time to work with some new buyers starting next month, you're friendly and coachable, and you can keep a secret, then reply to this email, put Project Cyrus in the subject line, tell me a little bit about your business, and I'll be picking people to work with this weekend. Now, so when we would describe to people what we were going to do, essentially we're saying, I'm going to build your website. I'm going to take you through our whole training program, teach you everything I know about making money with websites. And then you pay me when you do your first transaction. Okay. That removes any friction. So you don't have to convince people to let you do the funnel for them.
Yeah, I think that's really great.
Yeah, they have to qualify themselves to you. That they have to be, you have to believe that it's going to work. So you're essentially putting your money where your mouth is, you know?
Yep, nope, I like that. And mm-hmm. did you say you do tell them that you're going to do it for them, and this is what you're willing to do it for? Okay, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, and
yeah, because if you say to people, look, yeah, I do these funnels, I do the complete thing, all of the technical build out, the copy, the we'll work together on the titles and the lead magnet and all of that, get it up and operating and tested and functional, and I charge $2,500 for that. But I really believe in what you're doing. I know I can. I think you got a winner here. So let's go ahead. I'll work with you, and we'll do it. And you pay me from when we get your funnel up and running.
Okay. But I just to clarify, in the email where I'm like soliciting them, I'm telling them that I'm going to build these funnels for no cost, basically up front.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could depends on the relationship that you have with them, right? If you just sent a quick email to them and said, "Hey, would you like to work with me on building out your funnel?" If you just sent that as a 9-word email to a portion of your list, somebody might come back and say, "Well, how would that work?" Or, "Yeah, well, I'd love to," you know? Or you probably already have people who you've been in conversation with or had the conversation about it, and they've been, and money has been the issue, perhaps, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes perfect sense. Okay. And when it comes to my opt-ins, I know we talked about that a little bit ago, but do you think I should go back, not back, but continue doing the 9, you know, at this point I have it as my low-priced offer. I titled something slightly different than the 9 landing pages that convert at 40% or more. I titled it, look at it real quick, 17 high-converting funnels, what works to get the most yeses? Because I really wanted to focus on, like, funnels versus, you know, maybe landing pages.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, do you think that should be my opt-in?
Yeah, I think you can certainly test that. I mean, the audience will tell you whether you're on track, right? Because the votes will come in terms of opt-ins.
Okay. So maybe even split test the two. The complete funnel training versus the... Okay. So then I just don't have a low-priced offer except my core. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
It's all very exciting, Elizabeth.
It is. I agree, Dean. Thank you so much for your help in this. It's
awesome.
Much better to do with somebody else.
Out.
Okay,
perfect.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Hello.
Hey, Dean. How are you? This is Claudio, Miami.
Hi, Miami. Are you swimming?
Yeah, I'm getting around in a gondola, you know. So, Dina, my question is quick. A fairly big part of my digital marketing consulting business is working with realtors and mortgage brokers. And so there's a clear bias in my client base and growing enough to make me kind of focus on which CRM to actually choose. And I was looking at, oh, by the way, I apologize to the listeners for going off topic a little bit, but this was a quick way to kind of get a quick feedback from you on this. So I thank you guys for your patience. But I was thinking, does it make more sense? I know they're virtually identical, but would it make more sense for me to use Google Agent only because if I'm working with realtors, I can get a little bit of an edge because of the built-in tools in there. And not only that, but if I'm working with them, and I'm trying to help them organize their business as well, I can also refer them to a Google Agent as their home CRM.
Yes, absolutely. That's the Google Agent is specifically for real estate agents, so that's going to be an edge for any real estate agent.
But I was thinking, because I need to jump on one right now. So I was thinking, because I work with them, should I also jump on Google Agents rather than Google Clients?
Of course. It's the same tool. It's exactly the same tool. It's got all the same functionality. It's just that Google Agent comes bundled with all of my real estate programs. Landing pages, same functionality. It would be functionally the same for you, utility-wise, using Google Agent, but you'd have the advantage of the, you know, that it's real estate related.
Of having the built-in templates and tools already geared towards the very market that I'm serving anyway. Correct. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Cool. So That's it, man. Thank you so much, Dean.
Okay, awesome.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Okay, guys. There we go. That was the final question there. 90 minutes we've been going almost here. Almost 2 hours. Wow. So thanks for tuning in, and I'm going to make the recording of this available, so I'll send you an email with the recording. But if you got a book title that you want to kind of get my feedback on, send me an email. Send an email to dean@deanjackson.com and put book title in the subject line, so I'll know what you're what we're talking about. Tell me about your book title in there, and I'll get it to I'll be able to take a look and give you my quick feedback on that if you didn't get a chance to be on the call. So thanks for joining us, and I will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.